bitch.
Mass Effect there. Hey, great restart, bud. Great job.
Wow, was that cold or what?
Second in front. Try to catch that group. Oh, why? I'm pushing like a hell.
It is undrivable. There's puddles, aquaplaning everywhere. Unbelievable.
Behind you, very close. Okay, attack. It's fun. Okay, Timo, keep going. It's fun. It is done. Hold.
Sunshine, well done, well done. Pole position, fastest lap, and the race win. Job done. Take that. Have that, well done, Fisher.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the PlanetIRL.com podcast. This is episode 3, and I'm joined by three of my fellow associates from the site. Our webmaster, Lisa Kenny, our IndyCar editor, Paul Dalby, and one of our contributing writers, Steve. How are you guys today?
Good.
I'm well. Thank you, Cole.
Cool. So we will just jump into a breaking headline that happened just over an hour ago. Autosport and the Ferrari F1 website are reporting that Michael Schumacher returns, and I know Steve is particularly interested in this as one of our F1 fans at the site, so I want to get his opinion on seeing the new king return and what he thinks will happen of it.
Well, it's very interesting that he's coming back, first off. It's it makes sense for Ferrari to put the greatest Formula One driver back in the seat. Maybe it can prove their fortunes a little bit. A lot of people are questioning whether or not his Formula One fitness level is at where it should be. He did have a pretty bad fall on a superbike, which he's been doing in his quote-unquote retirement. But actually, when you look at it, Schumacher is no different than any other athlete that now has retired and come back. Granted, Massa has had, this terrible, terrible accident, which he's doing well, and he'll live a good life, and they're talking now he's going to race again. But it's going to be very interesting. I tell you, I'm sure the organizers of Valencia are not going to miss Alonso not being in the seat if they can get Schumacher back in there. That is for sure. It's very exciting. It's exciting for Formula One, and it's just another twist and turn in this crazy Formula One season that we've had this year, that's for sure.
I never got to see Michael race. I became a fan just as he was exiting this sport in 2006, and so I'm really excited to be able to see, if it's going to go good or if he's just going to fail right out of the blocks, which I hope he doesn't, because he is the most notable name in Formula One right now and in the last 20 years. And a quick update on Felipe Massa, who he's subbing for. He's walking and talking and rumored to be out of the hospital in just over a week now. His eye might have permanent damage, but his brain and his skull should make a full recovery, as I've heard it said over the last few days. Also, an update on Tony Kanaan. He suffered burns to his thumbs and to his eyes and his upper face after the fire at Edmonton, but he also is doing well, and he will be back for Kentucky this week. Kentucky this week, like I said, that's the next IndyCar race here on the schedule. Lots of changes planned, including the power to pass, which we'll get into here in a little while. The rear wickers will be gone, the tire ramps, the side pod extensions, all kinds of changes on the cars to help the oval racing, and I wanted to get you guys' opinions on that. We'll start with our IndyCar editor, Paul, and get his opinions on the changes.
Well, I'm really excited. I think they're really going to bring some variation to the cars finally. That they're going to give the teams an opportunity to engineer them again. And I think it's good that the series is implementing everything at once and not really giving the teams an opportunity to step into these changes. If they would have done, one change this week, another change next week, bring the power to pass the week after that, so on and so forth, you know, now you have a whole weekend to figure out what each of those little changes does again to the car. Now you have to throw them all on at the same time, and it's like a big puzzle that everyone has to figure out, and you're bound to have at least one team that figures it out, and probably several teams that don't figure it out. Even though they are pieces and devices that the teams have used for the last several years, you're still going to get the teams that can hone in on it right from the start, and other teams that are going to take a little bit longer to recover the engineering they had in the past years. The only hope is that the red cars are some of the ones that take a little longer to figure it out. And it'd be nice if some of the other cars hit the nail on the head right off the trailer, but I know it's probably not likely the case, but it would be nice. And I think, like I said, just throwing everything at once, it was the way to go. Make them figure out how all the pieces fit together. Give them several combinations to work with, and it'll make for an interesting race. I'm pretty sure of that.
And the go ahead,
one
Steve.
Thing about Kentucky that it going into it is that could not make this as great of a race as we hope it's going to be is in the two previous races that they've had. Now, granted, they were in the NASCAR the trucks is the drivers have complained explicitly about the track surface being really, really bumpy. So hopefully this won't affect the IndyCars too much, but that definitely has been something that a lot of people haven't been talking about are the bumps. And how is taking bits and pieces away from, or adding bits and pieces onto the car that weren't there last year, how is that going to affect the racing? I mean, granted, they say bumps make things more exciting. You get the sparks flying out from the bottom of the car. But I just question how good is that track surface going to be to the Indy cars this time around. It's definitely very interesting. The one thing that is also interesting about this whole thing is that these are optional bits and pieces that the teams can add, which means some of the lesser teams could show up running the same car that they ran at the last oval race, and some of the teams with the more engineering budget and the R&D budget could show up with the push to pass and everything. So granted, it's definitely going to add a whole nother element in, but the one thing I hope we don't see is the red cars and maybe the Andretti green cars get so far ahead that we're seeing cars going 2, 3, and 4 laps down and then Brian Barnhart's parking cars because they're going too slow. So I hope it doesn't create such a level of racing where you get 3 or 4 or 5 cars that are so far ahead of everything that, you've got this 5-car break and then you've got the rest of the field. So hopefully it doesn't create a larger gap, but time will tell. And certainly the first qualifying practice session is going to be interesting.
Another factor that we need to look at is that my understanding is that the track has been diamond ground in the last couple of weeks. So the surface is going to be much more similar to what you see at Indianapolis. It's going to be very abrasive, very different on tires. And I don't think the Indy cars have ever run a mile and a half that's been diamond ground before. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any tracks other than Indy that have had the diamond grinding. So now we have to worry, is that going to affect the tires? Obviously, we saw what diamond grinding did to the NASCAR tires last year. And the Firestone will need to make sure that the tires can last for however long they need to on this track. But does the fact that the track is ground now and much grippier, does that negate the need for some of this additional downforce that's going to be put into play? If you're bringing 300 pounds more of downforce in to increase grip in the corners, but you've also ground the track, can some of these teams that aren't going to have the budget to play with those additions, will the diamond grinding kind of negate the need for those? I think that'll be an interesting story through the weekend as well.
The way I understood it was they're taking downforce off, which I've always supported. The rear wings, especially, they're just so big, they create so much turbulence. They need to smooth the cars out and make less disturbance. And I think also on the diamond grinding that Texas might have had that early on. after they saw the cart speeds there. I think it might have been ground down. So I'm not sure, though.
It's going to be interesting to see how the push-to-pass works on ovals. I know, you know, in Champ Car they had some success with that. Seems a little bit more fitting for street courses, so I think it's going to be a little bit interesting. But, you know, coupling that with, you know, as we've just discussed, all the other optional changes that the teams have on their plate, really, I guess, just hoping that all of this leads to more passing. I don't know that I would see, maybe as Steve said, too much of a gap. I mean, it's possible, and hopefully that isn't the case. But, you know, we'll just have to wait for Kentucky and see how it all plays out.
And, of course, go ahead.
The two things on the push to pass that I'm really interested in see is Honda has had this bulletproof engine for, I think the last engine failure they had was in the 2005 Indy 500. And, I mean, that speaks volumes to Honda, but obviously they've been detuning their engine, so every competitor has an equal engine and, you know, last through the race. I just question, are we going to see engine failures for the first time in a couple of years? And the other thing is television going to be ready for the push to pass? When Champ Car ran it, they had a very, really great system where when they pulled up the telemetry, you could see how much time push to pass they had. Now, granted, the IRL system is going to be based on how many times you push the button, regardless of how long you use it for. I'm just wondering, is the television side going to be caught up and able to provide us with the information? Because I know as a fan watching the race on television or listening to it on the radio, that could be really confusing. I mean, how many pushes does the driver have? How are they going to let the other competitors know? If Briscoe has 10 more pushes and Castro Neves has 3 more pushes, is that going to play into it? So I'm very interested to see how they're going to cover this very interesting new crux into the IndyCar thing. So that was the two things that came to mind is how are we going to know what's going on? Is it going to be somebody telling us, or are they going to have a nice graphic prepared, you know, by the Indy Racing League? And I guess my other question is every driver going to be carrying this week? Because I gathered that it was an optional thing. So hopefully they give it to everybody. But obviously there's obviously some modifications that have to be made, using an extra button on the steering wheel or however they're going to, use this to activate it. But I'm sure they've thought about it, and I'm sure they have everything covered. But there has been very little news out, how is this going to be covered for the fans, so on and so forth. So that was my that's definitely going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
But from a technical standpoint, the actual product itself is just all done through the computer telemetry. I mean, basically they just plug in another code in their algorithm, and the engine's ready to go. Prior to this, though, I think all the cars have already had a full rich button, if you will, where they could, on the steering wheel, that would instantly take them from a fuel-saving mode at, 94%, 96%, and instantly put them back at 100 for, however long they held it down, without using the knob to go back and forth. So that, if that's the case, then you would assume that button would just be linked to this push-to-pass system, and they'd be ready to go. From a TV standpoint, I'd say there's a lot better chance that Versus will have it ready to go than if the race was on ABC this weekend.
Yeah. And I know there's a couple feeder series over in Europe that use a very similar system where they get a number of shots of this boost. It's a road racing series. I don't remember which series it is, but it's one of the millions of lower ladder series they have over there that has a boost system similar to this. I'm not so much worried about the TV aspect of it, because I think they have that covered. It's just a graphic they have to change, like they do with the KERS this year for F1. The thing I'm worried about is they haven't tested this. There's no data. They don't know if it's just going to fail the first time they hit it, or if it's going to explode. There's no data to back up what they're doing here. So I'm worried about maybe they're going to think they're going to have it for the race. They're going to change the cars, and then it'll fail during the race, and they won't be able to use it. So that's something they have to take into consideration as well.
It was reported that Tony Kanaan and Ed Carpenter tested at Chicagoland last month or 2 months ago. So it has been run on the track before.
Yeah, they did definitely tested that at the Firestone tire test. I'm not sure what race it was after, but that was definitely being tested at that time. At least this time when the IRL tested new components, they did it in a test session. If you remember, one of the components they added a couple years ago was a variable track steering. And they kind of gave that to Danica and they kind of gave it to Darren Manning in a race and said, hey, why don't you go try that and tell us how it works? And at least we're not doing it, you know, in race where we're giving it to certain drivers and telling them to test it out and, you know, just don't tell anybody about it. But it's definitely going to be very interesting to see. And I guess my one fear is I hope during a restart, one of the drivers up front doesn't accidentally hit his pit speed limiter and we have a, you know, a big stack up, you know, so. It's going to definitely add a new twist to the race this week, and hopefully it improves things.
And I mentioned the curves earlier in F1, and they designed that to be a push to pass button, and it's not. It's been a push not to be passed. It's not an offensive thing now. It's a defensive. When someone comes up behind you, you just hit the juice and you're out clear for a few meters. So I think that'll be interesting to watch too. Lisa and I will both be at the race in the pits, covering the race for you, and we'll be tweeting during the race too. So be sure to check that out live from Kentucky. It's gonna be awesome. And I think that just about covers the push to pass. Some other news this week: Barber Motorsports Park will be on the schedule, and Richmond will be coming off, and also the Brazilian races, plural. They're discussing maybe doing two races down in Brazil this year, or next year, my bad. So we'll get your opinions on that now.
Well, Richmond, I loved going there. It was the closest track to anybody who lives out in this end of the east coast of the country. It was a fun trip. You know, it's a nice track to see a race, but past three races there have been pretty, pretty awful, and actually the race this year was I was actually looking up at the sky hoping that rain would come and the red flag thing about halfway through. At all my years watching auto racing, I've never seen fans leave the racetrack with maybe 30 or 40 laps to go to beat the traffic. Just not a very good show. I think it probably worked much better when they had different chassis, different engines, but under the spec program, it just didn't work very well. And then the race before that, the race prior to that in 2008, rather, was just a complete crash fest. I mean, it was, I believe, 60 or 65 laps were run under yellow. It was just a mess. And it was also a race that Jamie Kamara was leading for a while, if anybody remembers him. So it was definitely was a track that worked really, really well for the IRL. And then I think as their cars, as you know, the engineering caught up with the cars, it just didn't work anymore. I just think it's terrible that, you know, you're looking at the Mid-Atlantic, you know, Northeast not having a race at all, potentially next year. Now there's talk of New Hampshire, and of course there's talk of a street race in Baltimore, and, you know, that's yet to be seen if it's gonna come on, but, I think, you know, Richmond was a NASCAR town. It's always going to be a NASCAR town. That is a NASCAR track. And, you know, it's just like Charlotte and Atlanta, and now we got Richmond. So it's just another, I think, wishful thinking on the IRL's part to get in these NASCAR territories, and it just didn't work for them. Yeah, and it's a shame because they really did have pretty decent crowds the past couple of years, so. But, you know, if the product's not any good, no one wants to go back.
Mm-hmm. The thing you mentioned that really I want to see is New Hampshire back. I never got to see an IndyCar race there, but I know the NASCAR races there, they're pretty good. And I think that track, especially if we're going to lose Milwaukee, we need another flat oval, mile-long track like that. So did anyone else have a take on the schedule changes?
I hate to see Richmond go. That buddy and I, we were discussing last fall where we were going to go this year, and I had thrown out Richmond, and we ended up going to Texas, which I absolutely love Texas. But now it really kind of depresses me if Richmond's off, because it just traditionally has been such a good race, even if the last two have kind of been stinkers. But I agree, we're really losing the short tracks. My heart could be assuaged if they went back to Phoenix. But I hate losing the three-quarter mile track. I love the track at Iowa, even though it doesn't really race like a short oval. It still is, and it still has a lot of the characteristics. Bringing Loudon back would definitely be a help, even though they've done some changes to that, I think, since IndyCar was there last. I think it's a variable degree bank now, where it was, I think it was just a straight 12 or 14 degree banking last time. But it is sad to see now that the East Coast has really been kind of negated at this point, like Steve said, without Richmond, without Atlanta, without Charlotte. They were at Dover at one point. They were at Loudon at one point.
Don't forget Nazareth. The Dover experiment was probably, undoubtedly, the worst track that the IRL has ever raced on.
The only thing they could do worse than that would be to go to Bristol.
I would love to see them go to Bristol. That's awesome.
Well, after seeing two races at Dover, where I'm fairly sure probably three-quarters of the field ended up with the yellow diaper wrapped around them, it was terrible. I've never seen a race like that. They had such a hard time, and because this was during the time where the IRL had the different television packages, where they were on Fox and they were on ESPN and ABC, this was a race that no one wanted to pick up the second year, and CBS actually was broadcast this IRL race for the second time, and it was terrible. It was just one of the worst races I've ever seen, and definitely I think it will go down as the worst IRL track that they've ever been to. It was just a mess. Just a complete mess. It was definitely, I never will ever forget seeing the races there. And it was like, let's go green for three laps and then let's break a piece of suspension and go in the wall. It was pretty bad. And Nazareth was an oval that drove like a road course that had elevation change in it. But, it was right in the Andretti's backyard. And I think that's the only thing that really kept them there for a while. But I saw a lot of races at Nazareth. Saw Scott Dixon win his first open wheel race there, which was the last kart race there, and definitely very, very sad to see that go. But one track that no one ever mentions, needs a lot of work, but has an open wheel history to it, is Pocono. I think Pocono would be an amazing track to see the Indy cars at.
Actually, Steve, I have mentioned that a lot of times, and every time I see it, people just shoot me down because it's too bumpy or it's too old or it's not a safe track at all. There's no fencing on most of the track, and it's not a safe track, but if they did a lot of work to it, I think it'd be great. And the other two I think would be great are Martinsville and Gateway. Long straights and then hard braking into a tight corner usually produces good racing, so I think they'd be good too.
IndyCar was at Gateway for several years, and the races there were awful. They were just awful. That track is too narrow. It just doesn't race well. Martinsville, I have to admit, I don't think that would be a good one. A half mile in an Indy car at Martinsville on the paperclip would be a tough one to watch.
Yeah. Just think about it. It's like Indy cars to Bristol. It's the spectacle that would be just so cool. To see a car like this, it'd be like, Monaco, a bicycle in your living room connotation thing there. But at least, maybe test there or something, because I think it'd be really awesome to see them go to Martinsville and have to, drive the cars again, not just hold your foot down and turn left.
I think Pocono, I like the Pocono idea. It would require a lot of work from a safety standpoint. Throw a new asphalt layer on there, put up some, safer barriers. But I think that would be a great place for the Indy cars to go, just because it's so unique. There's three corners there, and none of them are the same as each other. You really have to, it's a track of compromises. and it would really be both an engineering and a driving track. It would be a fantastic race if the Indy cars went back there.
And I know
it needs a lot of work.
And from the business side of it, probably the best thing that Pocono has going for it is it's independently owned. It's not run by ISC or Speedway Motorsports or really those are the only two, but it's an independent track. The Mattatoli family has owned that track for years. And really when you look at it, it's that and Indianapolis are really the only two tracks that are really family run anymore. So, I mean, just that alone sets it up as a potential great marriage. And they've had some great races there in the past. There's some great clips on YouTube. I believe it's from 85 where they actually had 40 Indy cars take the green flag one year, which was just amazing. So I'd love to see it back, that's for sure.
And they've had some problems with NASCAR the last few years on the business and administration side. They've been fighting over dates and times and stuff like that. So, you know, if NASCAR shows them the door, you know, we could swoop in and get it.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I think that the big NASCAR problem at Pocono is it's 500 miles, which is just entirely too long of a race at that track.
Yes, it's... Well, I don't know if that'd be good for IndyCar. I think we need a couple more 500 milers in IndyCar at Michigan, of course. Everyone wants Michigan back. Or Texas. We need more than one 500 mile race. And a lot of the oval races are becoming shorter every year. So I would like to see another 500 miler back if it was Michigan or Pocono or one of those tracks.
How about a 500 miler at Road America?
Oh, Lord. You want to drive 500 miles around a track like that?
You want to make it a test of the drivers and the machines. There's a, you know, I'll make it a good, four or five hour event. You know, and that's the type of track, Barber, Road America, Road Atlanta, Lime Rock, those permanent courses that are kind of set out, Watkins Glen.
Laguna Seca.
Yeah, Laguna to a point. But those are tracks where people come and they camp and they stay there all weekend and they want to be entertained from the time the sun comes up to the time the sun goes down. You can put a 4 or 5 hour, you know, almost now you're talking about endurance racing in an Indy car.
Which I've always wanted to see.
That would be a spectacle to see.
That would be
something different the league could do to really stand out from its competition.
I've always wanted to see an open-wheel endurance race, even with multiple drivers or something, just like a 10-hour enduro race with an open wheel. I know everyone hates the idea of multiple classes because it's dangerous, but that'd be interesting too. I've always liked endurance racing, and I think IndyCar could do something like that too. But Road America is a tough course to do a short race on because it's very fast and they're very wide corners and it's very bumpy, so I don't know if you could do one driver for 5 hours on that track, so I'm not sure about that. But I think they do need to come back on schedule.
I agree.
Also rumored this week at IndyCar News is the Danica-Ganassi relationship, and Ganassi saying he has talked with her and said she needs to make up her mind on what she's going to do. And there's really not a more controversial figure or talk about figure in IndyCar, and everyone has an opinion on Danica, so I thought I'd ask you guys about that too. We'll start with Paul, since he is a Danica fanatic.
I think she's going to Ganassi. I don't see the NASCAR thing being in her alley yet. Ganassi gives her an opportunity to look into NASCAR in a couple of years if that's what she really still wants to do. It gives her the best chance to win right away in the IndyCar series. Basically she becomes a contender now in Indianapolis, right away, which is what her ultimate goal is. Andretti Green just doesn't have the horses right now to give her a ride or to work with her to get a ride that is capable of winning week in and week out. She gets that at Ganassi. She gets a marketing exposure at Ganassi. whether it's with Target or if Ganassi can bring on another sponsor, you know, they're going to be able to market her, hopefully to the point that people outside of the IndyCar series will be able to see her on a more frequent basis. You know, if it's Target, they can activate that to, you know, to Kingdom Come, and you're going to see Danica at all the Target stores. Maybe you might even see Dari or Scott Dixon there with her.
I was going to say, I don't know, because you very rarely see Dixon, or even when Weldon was with them, you very rarely saw that in a Target, I will admit.
Well, the thought I just had listening to your whole sponsorship bit there was, what about Dario's man lotion?
Oh.
Being driven by Danica. Can you imagine? That would make my day.
You bring up a really great point, and with Dario's rotating sponsorships, basically how that works is those are all, you know, very big vendors to Target. And basically Target goes to them and says, hey, you want to sponsor for a race, you know, so on and so forth, we'll have a special in your store. So that, I could see that happening with Danica. I could see definitely her showing up in the stores, but I'll bring this up about Target. It's very disappointing going into a Target store and seeing more Reed Sorensen and Tony Stewart stuff than any other driver. I think during my time shopping at Target, which is not very long, I've only ever seen one Target IndyCar-based thing at a Target store, and it was a Juan Montoya rookie year 1/18 stale car that was on the back end cap of a clearance shelf. I bought it for $4, and it was by far the best thing I've ever bought at a Target. But you can't even go into a Target and buy a Hot Wheels car. That's really disappointing. I mean, you can go into Home Depot and buy a Joey Logano hat, or Lowe's, and buy a Jimmy Johnson hammer, for God's sakes, but you can't go in and buy, you know, a simple Target car or anything. So I don't know. I think Danica is just so marketable. There's so many different sponsors that could be attracted to her and her, you know, her likeness and everything. I think it would be a slam dunk for a company like Target and a company like Chip Ganassi Racing, who's had pretty much since he started his own race team, that's been his only sponsor, has been Target. I mean, I can't think of any other sponsor that he's had in IndyCars besides Target. So there's obviously a very good relationship there. And those people from Target, I'm sure they're smart and they know what's going on and they'll know what's going to sell and everything. But I think Ganassi, Danica makes a lot of sense. But I also would not be surprised if next year we see AGR go down to a two-car team, Tony Kanaan, Danica, and put all their engineering and all their teamwork into those two cars and see what happens. Because, you know, she's been very loyal to AGR. AGR's been very loyal to her, and I guess we'll see what happens. But it's definitely going to be very interesting. The one thing I do gather from the past couple of weeks is I really do believe that she is going to stay in IndyCar. And let's face it, she can never win another race again. But if she wins one Indianapolis 500, that will be bigger than anything else we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced of that.
That would just be huge. And you mentioned all the Target associate sponsors. I get Ganassi's press releases for both series and all they do. And every week there's a new, I get one saying so-and-so has joined the Target Chip Ganassi Racing team as a associate sponsor, and they have this one-inch long name on the car, but he is the best in the business when it comes to getting sponsorship. And I think if they get Danica, they'll be unstoppable when it comes to the marketing side. They won't even have to work. The people will pour in and ask them. They won't even have to go out and do anything practically. So getting Danica is the best thing they could do right now. So
I have to say, I do recall one event when I was at Target. And in fact, I actually think I went there for it because somebody on Track Forum had tipped me off on it, saying that Target was running a commemorative Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal box with their drivers. It must have been 3 or 4 years ago, because I think Dan Weldon was on it.
Yep,
and
I have that box.
I remember going to pick that one up. So
wow.
I know they ran that. I do recall that.
And how hard is it to just get a show car and put it outside the front of the store and have Scott sign an autograph for, you know, an hour? Is that
kind
of...
Yeah, that's pretty hard. I actually, in St. Pete a lot, I see, you know, they'll have the 7-Eleven car out there. I mean, typically it's around a race weekend, but you could easily, you know, just kind of take one on a tour.
And, you know...
Speaking of 7-Eleven, there is a sponsor that I wish more sponsors would follow. Every 7-Eleven in the Chicagoland area up here, you walk in, there's usually a picture of the entire Andretti Green racing team on the door. You go to the soda fountain, there's a big Tony Kanaan image up there. There's usually two or three posters of Tony Kanaan and all four of the AGR drivers there. 7-Eleven has done a wonderful job of pushing both Tony Kanaan and the entire Andretti Green racing team in all of their stores.
And I know for those of you that have the desire to even listen to Donald Trump, if you watched The Apprentice a couple years ago, they had a whole episode with Tony Kanaan on it, and they were designing the new 7-Eleven racing team marketing scheme on the show there. It's that kind of stuff. And another thing like that, I was at the Dayton Air Show a little while ago, and they have, every year, they have the FedEx plane out there just displaying it, and there's Denny Hamlin in his car just sitting there signing autographs or whatever, and he's sitting there with a show car, and that's the kind of stuff you need to do. You need to activate the sponsors, and you need to get the names out there, and I think it'll help both sides of the equation if they do that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, also in the news, not so much IndyCar, BMW F1 announced just this morning that they will be pulling out of F1 at the end of this year, and this is just, it's terrible because they're one of the great, well, not great, but notable teams, and they started winning last year, and they've came around the last couple of years, and it's really sad to see them go because they have some quality drivers, especially Bobby Kay, because he has world championship skill, and I don't know where he's going to go next year because everything is filled unless he goes to one of the new teams. So,
yeah, I mean BMW. I mean they've had a rich history in Formula One, mainly as an engine supplier. Obviously, deciding to buy into the Sauber team a couple years ago to create a factory team. You know, had a great season last year. Finished second in the constructors. Finished, I believe, third in the Constructors' mm-hmm. Championship. You know, had the win with Robert Kubica. But, you know, the one thing about, I think, BMW, and I think when we look at it and we analyze it, the BMW's downfall was not hanging on to Sebastian Vettel. Great German driver. Scored points at the U.S. Grand Prix after Kubica got hurt in that terrible, terrible accident up in Montreal. You know, when you look at it, I mean, Nick Heidfeld is by far no racing driver aggravates me more than Nick Heidfeld. Everybody talks about how great he is, and he's never won a race. He's never won. I mean, it's just, you know, it's very frustrating, the topic of Nick Heidfeld. But, I mean, you look at it, you know, there's a downfall in the economy. Obviously, BMW will probably end up back on the map in a couple of years doing something else. Maybe go win Le Mans again. Who knows? Maybe they'll end up putting an engine in the back of a car for the Indy 500. But, you know, they're a very smart company. They're obviously in racing for what racing was meant for, and that's developing new technologies for their cars. And they even said this morning at their press conference that they've had, you know, an incredible amount of information and knowledge for the engineering of their road cars, and they've gotten everything out of their program. But obviously a name like BMW, a manufacturer, leaving a sport is not very good. And I know Toyota quickly came out today and said, oh, no, we're in it. I would not be surprised if we see a company like Toyota leave. And if Toyota leaves, they're not only going to take their factory team with them, they're definitely going to leave Williams in a bind because they have that Toyota engine package right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's been one of the wildest Formula One seasons I've ever experienced. And this just adds to the craziness, you know. It's definitely very sad, but, you know, we will see. I personally think that, that the BMW team will probably get sold, like Braun. You know, there was talk this morning on the Autosport website that maybe they're just going to hand the team back over to Peter Sauber and let him run it, because he's been a member of the team, hasn't been running the team, but he's been there in spirit and has shown up to races and everything. So it's not like he hasn't been out of the sport too long, but it's definitely a shock decision. And of course, you know, doing it during the 3-week break that they have is obviously very smart, but we will see. Now we got Schumacher back, so Valencia is going to be very, very interesting in a couple weeks. It's almost like the season's going to start all over again.
Mm-hmm. And the thing I also, when I think BMW, I think of all the people they've brought into the sport. Felipe Massa, Nick Heidfeld, even though he's terrible. Raikkonen, I think, started with him. So did Vettel, you said. And they've brought in several talented drivers. None of the drivers they've ever brought in have been bad. Nick Heidfeld could be in that equation. So I think them leaving is going to hurt the sport all around. And it's just another sign of the economic situation we're in.
Keep in mind as well that BMW is part of the Formula One Teams Association, so their withdrawal hurts that organization as well. And any power that they wanted to wield across, you know, the FIA and Formula One as a whole, you know, that just now becomes one team less that's in their pocket that they can really use as a bargaining ploy. You know, with the Concord agreement up for renewal and whatnot, you know, the Formula One Teams Association, if they want to go forward as a strong, unified entity, they need as many of the teams doing that as they can, and the loss of someone like a BMW is really going to hurt that organization.
Mm-hmm. And we'll now, I think that just about covers all the headlines we've had this week, so we'll move on to our new segment of this week's awards, so stick around. We're now moving on to our awards segment of the podcast here. We have four new awards that you might know because I did them a while ago on the site, but now we're doing them out loud here on the podcast. We have our first award is a very highly desired award, and everybody just wants this more than anything in the world. It's the Marty Roth Award for Excellence in Chicanery, awarded to that driver who shows the true Marty Roth spirit and gets in the way more than is possible. And this week, I think we're going to have to give it to poor old Ed Carpenter for blocking the leaders up and almost ending the race too early there at Edmonton. He's a good guy, and he's great on the ovals, but on road courses, Ed, you are Marty Roth, and you do deserve the Marty Roth Award for Excellence in Chicanery. And I think that just about covers it, so we'll hand it over to Paul for his award, and he'll explain what that is.
The Eddie Cheever Lunacy Award goes to the person or individual who just makes you scratch your head and just say, huh, all weekend long. This week's award goes to the only person who took more shots to his man card than Pink Lloyd has this weekend, and that goes to Dario Franchitti, who was subjected to more one-liners on Twitter and track form than pretty much the rest of the entire IndyCar Series family has the entire year this far. So congratulations, Dario, for the first recipient of the Eddie Cheever Lunacy Award.
That is, we had a thread in the forum that's still open if you want to go drop some of your own Dario-isms in there, because when I got that press release, I was amazed at of all the sponsors, you get a man lotion sponsor. So he was loose on entry, but they got him tightened up eventually. And we'll end on that note and hand it over to Steve for his award, also a new one. And take it away, Steve.
Well, we got the Whiner of the Week, and if you haven't read it yet, you have to check out the Ed Hinton article. Throwing Tony George under the bus, backing him over, then taking him out and hitting him with a shovel. Did pretty much everything under the sun to him. So,
and I know if our buddy IRL Defender is listening, he would just love to hear that shout out to Ed Hinton, who is his best friend in the whole world. And now, the moment you've all been waiting for, Lisa is going to give away the glorious award from PlanetIRL.com. The Driver of the Week Award from Lisa.
All right. I don't think Driver of the Week Award needs much explanation, but of course for Edmonton, we are going to go with the one and only Will Power for leading 90 of 95 laps at Edmonton and winning his first IndyCar victory. So congratulations to Will and his entire crew and team.
And for those of you that don't know, Lisa just fawns and drools over Will Power, and I'm terrified of what's going to happen in Kentucky if we see him, because might have to bring the pepper spray along and hold her back a little.
He is quite the good-looking young gentleman, but I have a feeling I'm going to have to be watching out for you, Cole, with Danica running around. So
yes. Get that out of your system now. Our final segment on the PlanetIRL.com podcast are our predictions for the IRL race this week in Kentucky. Each of our four guests, all four of us, will pick who we think will finish in the top three and who we're going to be watching, that driver to watch all weekend. So we'll start that off with Lisa, and she'll give us her top three and her driver to watch.
Well, I kind of hate to have to go with obviously some Penske and Ganassi guys here, but we'll have to wait and see how this whole push to pass and all the changes work out. But I would actually like to see a repeat for Scott Dixon. I think that would be great. He hasn't really he hasn't done so great in the last couple races, so I would like to see him win one again. I probably also always have to go with my man Ryan Briscoe. I do always pick him for my weekly picks. And then I wouldn't mind going and seeing if Ed Carpenter or somebody, maybe even a Dan Weldon. I think Dan Weldon could be somebody to watch just based on his performance there last year. So, you know, maybe he can be somebody that can be our non-Penske Ganassi driver to come pull it out for us.
And over to you, Paul. Who are your top three and your driver to watch this week?
I'm a bit concerned now because I think Lisa may be looking over my shoulder. My list here is actually Dixon, Briscoe, and Weldon.
Oh, man.
I think
nice.
Dixon
great minds
just
think alike.
Must be it. Dixon just obliterated the field at Kansas this year, and it, you know, which is almost an identical track to Kentucky. Briscoe was fast at Kansas until the whole pit lane incident. And I think Weldon's just tired of running around the back, and Panther has always run well at Kentucky. Driver to watch, last time he was here, Dario decided he didn't think that 300 miles was quite enough, so he went at about 300.1 and then promptly rear-ended Kosuke Matsuura and ended up on his dome in turn one again. But driver to watch, I think, look for some of the Andretti Green guys. They were fast at Texas. Danica and Marco had their little tiff. I think Marco is going to be competitive this week. I think he'll have a good weekend. I don't see him in the top three, but I think he's going to run solidly. He'll have a good showing for himself this weekend.
And Steve, who were your top three and a driver to watch?
Well, not much difference the other three guys, but I'm going to go one. Frankie too, probably throw cash up there. He's been pretty quiet for the past couple weeks. He hasn't really done much. Maybe he's due to, you know, sneak out. I think he kind of got a lucky second place last week, but that's my opinion. But definitely the driver to watch, I think, is Danica. I don't know. She's good on these mile and a half. If a team is going to be able to manage all these changes besides the two front runners, it's going to be Andretti Green. So I definitely would like to keep a lookout for Danica Patrick this weekend.
I'm going to kind of roll with the AGR theme. My first place, I think everybody's buddy and the biggest nose in IndyCar racing, Tony Kanaan, is going to win this week in Kentucky. I think he's due, and I think if anyone can wrap their head around these changes fast enough, it'll be AGR, so I think he's going to win. Second is Will Power, because he has momentum, and I think he's starting to come around on the ovals too. And third, also on all three of your list, is Dan Weldon. And my driver to watch is Sarah Fisher, because she will be back this weekend, and I've always really liked Sarah, and I think she'll do well. And I think that'll just about wrap it up here for the PlanetIRL.com podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and be sure to check out PlanetIRL.com for all your racing news and opinions. Also see the forum in there and the race chat for talking during the races and any other time. So stop by, send us an email, or just tell us what you think, because that's what this is all about. It's all about the interaction with you, the reader, and the fellow fan. So thanks for joining us, and be sure to check in next week for the next PlanetIRL.com podcast.
No, another crash, and it's upside down. We've got a car upside down. It's Marco Andretti.
Marco, you okay?
There are actually 7 previous winners of the Monaco Grand Prix starting in tomorrow's race, and 4 of them are Michael Schumacher.
All right, pitch this lap. Watch the speed limit. 3, 2, 1. Watch right here.
A lot of people here are really debating whether Ricardo Rossi is Formula One material.
Well, that's a fairly short debate, mate. I am so annoyed. Now, I can't tell you how annoyed I am. I just can't believe that we had, well, the problems that we had in Brazil. And I come here and we have even more damn problems. So, you know, the car should not be where it is.